Welcome to the Queer Confidence Podcast, the podcast to help you become your most confident queer self. I'm your host, he, she, they, Coach Alex Ray, and I haven't always been this confident. In fact, I used to be super insecure. And through this show, I want to share with you what's worked for me, my clients, and my guests so that you can become more confident. Hello, my unicorns. I'm so excited to be here with you today with another guest interview. Today, I have for you Kaylin Strauss, who is better known around the internet as Ecstatic Self. Kaylin is an ecstatic spirituality coach with a background in classical yoga tantra, an author, an award-winning actor, writer, and film director. And I'm so excited to have him on the podcast today to share about his experience with tantra, how he helps his clients with their tantra practices, and what you can learn today about your own spirituality and sexuality. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Kaylin.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. I would love for you to like introduce yourself a little bit more. Tell everyone a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Great. Well, you did such a good job introducing me, but to add a little bit more nuance to that, I've written a couple books on how do we come home to ourselves? How do we find the most authentic, integrated, radical, juicy version of ourselves that is inclusive of our sexuality, that is inclusive of our spiritual life, that is inclusive of all our crazy bits. And that really is the focus of what I help other people to uncover within themselves. So I host a YouTube channel called Ecstatic Self. I've been doing it for about 3 years now. We've got about 265,000 subscribers at this moment, which kind of boggles my mind because I had no idea anybody would be interested in this shit. But it's wonderful to have so many people engaging. And I tell people that the channel explores the intersection of meditation and spirituality, queerness, sex and sexuality, what is masculinity in today's world, and then how do we bring that all together to live an authentic life and find belonging both within ourselves and in the wider world. Mm-hmm. I work with largely men, largely gay men, but there are some exceptions from around the world. Virtually, I meet with people once a week for about an hour, and I help them come home to themselves. I help them find more integration. And what we work on varies person to person. Some people, it's really about their coming out journey or still struggling with their sexuality post coming out. Some people, it's about developing a deep spiritual practice. Sometimes it's people who are really struggling with connecting with their sexual energy and seeing that as something very divorced from having a spiritual life and something shameful. So working around that shame. My background that got me all into this is I lived in an ashram for 7 years. I got into yoga and meditation during college and took a guru, kind of dove deep into that tradition. I left that tradition around the same time I left working as a professional actor. And in my journey of like what comes next, I started writing and I started doing corporate coaching. And when the pandemic started, I kind of brought all that stuff together with now doing my books, doing my YouTube channel, working with people one-on-one. And I feel so immensely blessed to get to do what I do and to engage with people who are having life-changing moments, who are really seeing themselves evolve and develop and change, and getting this feedback that even in some small way, what I'm putting out there is making a difference for them and helping them live a better life.
That's amazing. I'm so thankful that they like that your clients have you, that you're doing the work that you're doing out in the world. Can you tell us a little bit more about like your personal journey and how did you get into this kind of work? Was this always, were you always interested in spirituality? Were you always interested in like sexual dynamics, or was, how did this come along for you?
Oh, I love that question because it is definitely a journey, right? It's something that continuously evolves. As a young person, yeah, I was always very much interested in spirituality. I can remember having conversations with God and feeling like that was a very normal experience as a little kid. Like it felt like something very personal and tangible, something I could very easily connect with. And from a very young age, I was very connected with sexuality. I think I started masturbating when I was like 7 years old. So pretty young. But sex was something that was very fearful for me. I grew up in a household where my father was shamed for sexuality. My father was a nudist and very sex positive. He used to be a swinger and go to sex clubs. And my mother was the opposite. She has only ever had sex with my father. So there was a lot of shame around that. And my father was also a closeted bisexual. He came out finally about 4 years ago at around age 80. God bless him. So there was a lot of tension around same-sex attraction as well. So for me, even though I became, you know, sexually active pretty young with myself, it became something that I really shut down, especially because at a young age, I thought I really wanted to succeed as an actor. And even then, I kind of got the message that if you wanted to be a successful actor, then you couldn't be gay. And so I said, okay, well, I'll do whatever it takes. So I buried my sexuality. I didn't end up even kissing anyone until I was 25 years old, which, you know, maybe it saved me from some unfortunate decisions, but you don't get to escape being a teenager. You, even if, you know, if you're coming out at 40, you're still going to go through that chaotic churning process. And so I had to do some development later in life than you're supposed to, a decade later at least. But when I was in college, I started to get super into spirituality, and I grew up Methodist. I never had an issue with the church, but I always felt that there was something more. I always felt like there was a deeper connection, a sense of ecstasy, a sense of awe, majesty, tingling, juiciness, whatever you want to call it. And the church couldn't give me that. And I would ask, and all I would get back was, join the choir, join a youth group. And I'm like, that's not it. I know there's more.
Right.
And so I started researching. I looked up Buddhism, Hinduism, Baha'i, Mormonism. I looked up everything and started really connecting with yoga and meditation. And there was this one teacher I really connect with in Chicago. And she suggested I go into a yoga teacher training at this big ashram in the Rocky Mountains. And I had a scholarship that paid for it, and the timing worked out perfect. So I went the summer before my senior year, and I found a sense of home. I found a sense of belonging and answers to the questions I was looking for. And this was a tradition that identified as classically tantric. So classically tantric, as it's used often in the world, means that it's divorced from anything sexual. It means those things, you can imagine them, but they're not meant to be done. And what's really hard about Indian tantra, unlike Tibetan tantra, is it had to go underground due to different invading cultures who were very inhospitable to sex and sexuality, very inhospitable to taboo practices. And tantra has always been about exploring the taboo, exploring that which is not mainstream. And by the time the Brits invaded, it basically disappeared. And so anybody who's practicing classical Hindu tantra is resurrecting a dead religion. And because so much of it was oral, there's no concrete or sure way to be able to say what it actually was. There's a very good chance it involves sex and sexuality. And we can say that because if we look across the Himalayan mountains to Tibet, the Tibetan practitioners of Tantra, Vajrayana Buddhism Tantra, are still doing mostly the same practices as the people in India, but with different names and a different language, and sex and sexuality is a big part of it. And that was a revelation for me, that when I ended up leaving this community and starting to read the writings of Buddhist Tantra teachers, realizing how much there still was of that. So I spent almost a decade with this teacher studying classical Tantra, moved into this community, lived there, worked there, did selfless service, had 4 hours of meditation almost every day. And while I was there, I did my coming out process. And during my coming out process, I had a friend. I was working as an actor at the Second City in Chicago. And one of my colleagues invited me to attend a Neo Tantra massage workshop. So Neo Tantra, New Tantra, whenever you hear people for whom they say, hey, I do Tantra, and it's basically just like sensual massage or how to have better orgasms, that's Neo Tantra. And so he invited me to one of those. And I was so nervous. I was visibly shaking walking into the building. One, because I was still a virgin, and two, because I knew I shouldn't be there. You know, if my teacher found out I'd been there, it would not have been a good situation. But I went, and as I was walking into this building, walking up the stairs, I heard an audible voice say, this is part of the work you're meant to be doing. And that's only happened a few times to me in my life where I've heard the voice of God or, you know, a disembodied voice speaking to me. Yeah. And I remember hearing myself reply back, shut up, no way, absolutely not. And lo and behold, here we are a decade later or so, and that ended up being very much the case. So that voice was right on. But one of the things that workshop kind of awakened in me was an awareness of how important and how critical connection is. Our critical human touches, how we are not meant to be solitary organisms. We are not meant to live alone. We are pack animals, and how tremendously healing touch, intimacy, seeing and being seen, reeling together, learning to be vulnerable with somebody can be. A lesson that I would continue to learn as I continued to come out. And then especially after I met my life partner, I've been together with for over 8 years, and just seeing how much healing has occurred through loving each other and being with each other. So as I've evolved as a spiritual practitioner and as somebody who continues to explore this wonderful world called Earth and all the possibilities that it has for living a vibrant and joyful life, the more and more that I have felt that sex and sexuality has to come a part of our spiritual life, because it is so present to our daily life. We spend so much time and energy focusing on sex. And especially if you're a gay man, right? Like, I forget the statistic. The average amount of time a gay man spends on Grindr every day is staggering. We will never accept a spiritual path that tells you that sex is bad. We will never be able to accept a spiritual path that says queerness is bad. And in fact, I think the best route we can take is to find a connection to spirituality that is not only inclusive of sexuality, but celebratory of sexuality, and say, hey, your queerness is a gateway. Your love of sex is a gateway to your highest self. And something that I've really come to believe the longer that I've been on this path is the immense sacredness in the queer experience. And queer meaning trans, gay, whatever, anything where you are breaking the tropes of society, breaking the tropes of heteronormativity, breaking the tropes of gender, what is traditionally gender appropriate. Because when you step outside of those rules, you see something from a different perspective. You are granted an advantage. What is an understanding of the divine or the universe or God or whatever you want to label it? Mm-hmm. But seeing the other side. And I'm a big believer, and there is research to back this up, that pre-patriarchy, pre-industrialization, that queer people around the world have been the holders of spirit. That they're the ones that would be the priests, the shamans, the sages, the guardians of that which is other. And if we look at what are some of the major tropes of modern gay life, lots of sex with multiple partners, party drugs, parties, dancing, all of these in another context are all spiritual ritual. There have been, you know, sacred orgies. There have been temple prostitutes using sex and sexuality for a transformation. There have been the use of hallucinogenic substances to change your mind, to step you out of your limited construct of who you think you are. How is that too different from, you know, taking ecstasy at a club? Speaking of clubs, ritualistic dance, ecstatic dance, using movement, repetitive motion, repetitive rhythms, flashing lights to achieve an altered state of awareness. I think all these things that we ascribe as being the quote-unquote gay experience or mainstream gay culture are all vestiges of our spiritual past trying to resurrect themselves. And yes, they are devoid of context, and yes, they are devoid of meaning and a deep-rootedness, but they're still there. It is what we are drawn to because that is part of our purpose. And Tantra, whether you're looking at classical Tantra or Buddhist Tantra or Neo Tantra, is so much about the embracing of the outsider experience, about stepping out of community and going to the charnel grounds, the cremation grounds, and communing with spirits. We're wandering naked through the streets covered in ash, carrying a begging bowl made out of a human skull, or having sex with somebody who isn't your partner, or imbibing unholy fluids. And this idea that if you can go into these fearsome places, these taboo places, find God there, find peace there, find serenity there, then you've won. Then you can go anywhere. Then you have achieved a state of being that can thrive no matter what life throws at you. And that truly is the heart of the tantric message, is God is everywhere. God exists in everything. And when you can see the divine in the beggar on the street, in your sex life, in the getting fired from your job and losing everything, in a really messy sexual experience, no matter what, if you can see the divinity there, then you're experiencing true tantra. It's the opposite of renunciation. It's the opposite of saying, I have to give up things to find God. I have to give up meat. I have to give up sex. I have to give up alcohol. I have to give up whatever. Instead, it says, I go everywhere and I find the divine in all.
Beautifully said. Okay. So I'm wondering, for someone that's maybe listening right now and is saying, okay, I'm curious, I'm interested in hearing more about tantra, I'm interested in hearing more about how I can maybe decrease the shame around my sexuality. But maybe this person is, they grew up with a spiritual religious background that taught them a lot of the same things that you expressed, that shame, the shame around sex, particularly queer sex. What kind of advice would you have to them, or even like your younger self right now, to just put their mind at ease so that they could potentially take something away from today's episode?
Whenever I teach meditation, and I teach a live class every Sunday at 6 p.m. on my YouTube channel, so feel free to tune in if that's useful to you. But whenever I start teaching a meditation, one of the very first things I say is allow yourself to be where you are. I think so many of us have this strong desire to change our given circumstances, to fix, to move, to find a way of getting comfortable right now, finding peace right now, having the body I want right now, whatever it is. And what that does is it creates a tension within us. It creates, you know, I often think about one of the first laws of physics. Every action has an opposite and equal reaction. If you decide you want to belly flop into the water because you are hurling at several miles an hour and you are a big blunt force going against a watery surface, it's going to feel like you smashed into concrete. It's going to feel hard. But if you just step to the water's edge and slip in, you'll move effortlessly. And so the more force we have, the more we need and want and desire, the less we're going to shift, the more force is going to push back at us. And so the very first thing I encourage people to do is to accept where you are. It may not be comfortable. It may not be fun, but allow yourself to simply be. Take a breath and accept your given circumstances. And when you can start to feel a little release, a little expansion, perhaps a little more breath here, you'll feel what I like to call space. In tantra and my personal philosophy, there is nothing good or bad. It simply is. In the same way, there is nothing inherently negative or positive, evil or good. It's all the same energy. It's all divine. But the difference is, things can be in a state of contraction where, you know, think of it being frozen. All the molecules pull tighter together. It gets smaller. It can't move. Versus the state of expansion, where the molecules move a little further apart and it stops being a solid and maybe moves into a liquid or a gas and things move more freely and it takes up more space. When we are contracted, when situations feel contracted, we feel stuck, we feel depressed, we feel tight. When we can breathe and let go and open up a little bit more, suddenly we become a little more fluid. Things can move. More opportunities present themselves. And so when we can create this space, then change becomes possible. And when we can let go of our need to fix and make it okay right now and just accept it for what it is, the ironic thing is, then change happens. It's like an old adage, when you stop looking for love, love finds you. Right? Often that desire you have is creating the obstacle that's preventing it.
Or like a watched pot never boils.
Right.
Like,
that's true. Yeah. And so this would be my message for somebody who's dealing with a situation like this is take a moment, take a breath, accept where you are, find a little sense of expansion, find a little sense of release. And with that, you'll often find a little bit more clarity too. You'll get an idea. You'll have a eureka moment. You'll have new insights into your condition because you're not so trapped in the way you've been seeing things. And then you can take a step forward. I'm a big believer that a spiritual path should never be something that totally uproots us from where we came from and transplants us to something else. I'm not a big believer in the benefits of conversion. I really am. And the Dalai Lama says the same thing, right? Like, don't become a Buddhist. Stay in the tradition you are, but then find the tools that are helpful for you where you are. Now, I'm using the word Tantra today a lot because it's, you know, what language you've been using, what you've asked me to talk about. But if you go to my YouTube channel, I very rarely use that. I think I have 2 or 3 videos out of almost 400 up there with Tantra in the title, just because it comes with a lot of baggage. And because I don't want people to think I'm saying, hey, you need to convert to this other spiritual path. But to say, hey, we can take these lessons, we can take these ideas and allow them to meet you where you are. And I really do think that you have everything that you need for your personal evolution, for your happiness, for your enlightenment, if you want to call it that, right here. Mm-hmm. And the area you find yourself in as the tools, the teachers, the gifts, everything you need, if you just see it, if you just open your eyes and become aware of the miracles that already are present in your life. You don't need to go to India. You don't need to go to Tibet. You don't need to move into an ashram for 7 years like I did. It is all right here if you just see it.
Amazing. So with that, you know, I know a minimal amount about Tantra. I know what it is in general, but I would love to hear 2 things. One, from what I understand, Tantra tends to be phrased in a very like gender binary way. So I would love to hear about how you bring it to the queer experience for gay people, trans people, non-binary people. And can you also, before maybe we go there to queerifying Tantra, can you tell us a little bit more about how you define it or what Tantra is for somebody that's maybe not familiar at all? And feel free to share. I want to hear like your perspective on it. You said that you don't even use the word Tantra much because of the baggage that it comes with. So
yes. Well, I will answer the questions actually in the order you asked them. Tantra can be perceived as being heteronormative because if you look at a lot of the quote unquote tantric texts, the main ones that have survived that people turn to, like the Vaigana Bhairava, they're usually told in a conversation form between Shiva and Shakti. So the divine masculine and his consort, the divine feminine. And Shiva is supposedly in the text, the holder of the knowledge, and he's explaining it to the feminine. Although we see as you go further into the text that she already knows all the answers. She's just asking them for the benefit of the humans who are receiving this. Mm. So there is that masculine feminine paradigm in the text. However, what we have to understand is that everything we receive from India comes from an imperialistic lens. Indian culture was decimated by the Brits when they invaded and took over. And as we see right now, this year in Africa, where American Christians have gone into places like Uganda, who were not traditionally homophobic, who actually revered the queer experience for centuries, millennia. And now these very, very restrictive Christian ideals, because it was, you know, some of the most judgmental Christians who went there proselytizing. Now Uganda's passing all this atrocious homophobic legislation that can put people in jail for their lives just for being accused of being gay. So we can see how the ideas can be exported and really do some really nasty things to a culture. The same thing happened in India, where it didn't used to be homophobic. Go back hundreds of years. It used to be very celebratory of the queer experience. And there are still some vestiges of that today where you see what we would call trans or we would call gender nonconforming, where they have special terms for them and they're considered good luck to invite to your wedding and, you know, that they're perceived as people who can perform curses. And so if they ask you for a dollar, you better give it to them. Like, so there is still some quasi respect for them, we can see. But unfortunately, India has become incredibly homophobic because of the British invasion. And I have point blank had Indian people tell me, I cannot practice yoga because I'm a gay man. Mm. And of course, that's bullshit. That is absolutely bullshit. And then when we look at the tantric tradition specifically, and yoga can be tantric, it cannot. The other term is sutric. Sutric is renunciation. Tantric is what we've been talking about. When we look at the tantric path, which is all about bridging social norms, it's all about embracing the taboo. Of course, queerness finds a home there, right? Like, what is the queer experience but the breaking of heteronormative? Like, even if you're a cisgendered, very masculine-presenting gay man, you are still breaking gender norms because you're doing that thing that men are not supposed to do, right? That you are shucking off the traditional labels of masculinity by having sex with another man. You are fulfilling the woman's role in a way. So it doesn't matter how masculine or feminine presenting, you are still gender nonconforming. You are still breaking societal taboos. So I believe Tantra in itself is very inclusive. And if you look at some of the well-known Tibetan teachers of Tantra, they have been very embracing of the LGBTQ community. And they have, in their writings, talked about how Tantra can be applied to gay couples and gay sex. Now, they will say there are certain practices that can only be done when being done between a man and a woman. I don't know how much I agree with that, because the truth is we all hold a balance of the masculine and the feminine within us. And one of the wonderful things about being queer is we have a greater balance of that within us than a heterosexual person or a gender normative person has, because they need the opposite to find balance, right? A cisgendered man needs a cisgendered woman to find a true sense of balance. As queer folk, we already have that balance. We already are existing, holding the polarity continuum within us. And how sacred is that? How special is that? In many ways, that makes us more divine because we are already encompassing of the totality of human experience in our gender not normativeness, in our sexuality not normativeness. And so I can see Tantra as being a wonderfully embracive of the queer experience. And again, remember the fact that we are not doing real Tantra. It's dead and gone, at least the Indian version is. And if you want to do Buddhist Tantra, then great, you're going to have to go convert to Vajrayana Buddhism, which you can go do. But like I said earlier, I think it's best to meet us where we are, to root ourselves into our own natural habitat, not transplant us to some different forest on the other side of the globe, and say we can take these ideas, we can take these tools, and then bury them in the fertile earth around us. Let them sprout into analogous practices that are similar but rooted in our culture. In the same way that we've got pyramids in Egypt and we've got pyramids in Central America. They're both pyramids. They're a little bit different, but they're both pyramids from around the same time-ish, right? We make it our own, and then we turn it into this beautifully queer, rainbow, kaleidoscopic spiritual tradition that is inclusive of our lives where we are. Because we're never going to be able to live the life of a Tibetan or an Indian person. We're never going to be able to live the life that they have, because it is a completely different culture. It's a completely different experience. It is a completely different world and worldview and vantage. So how do we make it our own? And how do we make it something contemporary and present while being appreciative of the traditions from whence it came? All of that, I think, leads into your second question of what is Tantra? It's everything we've been talking about. It's the embracing of the idea that the divine is in everything and everyone and every object, whether we would consider it sentient or not, that God exists everywhere, that you find God by embracing everything rather than rejecting it, to see that we hold polarity within ourselves and within each other. And that polarity can mean masculine and feminine. It can mean the light and the dark, positive and negative, uphill, downhill, whatever you want to call it. That we are encompassing all of it. That everything is divine. That everything is sacred. For me, that's how I would define it.
Awesome. Thank you for all of that. I just really enjoyed getting to listen to you and your perspective there. And I think I really enjoy the way you are kind of sharing with us that how to, you know, I know this word has connotations that people may not like, but appropriating these practices for integrating another culture's practices into our own, learning from it, respecting it, honoring it, and letting ourselves kind of take what works for us personally, leave the rest, and know that we can make, like you've talked about with easing into a pool, like kind of more gradual changes as opposed to, oh, you need to go, you know, move into an ashram, become a monk. Like, you've got to fully change 100% of everything about your life. That's just not realistic or true. And go ahead. It looks like you had thoughts or responses to that.
I appreciate you bringing up the word appropriation, because obviously it's something that we have all become sensitized to in the last 30, 40 years or so. This idea that oh, you know, we don't want to take this culture's thing and use it. Because of the history of exploitation, because of the history of, you know, reducing a very rich, complex thing to something often commodifiable that often is being exploited for resources, for ideas, for money. But when we kind of step outside of the box of which we use the word appropriation and look at the larger and more historical perspective, everything historically has been about the free trade of ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, even look at people's cuisines throughout the world. You know, garlic is used, cumin is used from Mexico to India. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is used throughout the world. It didn't start off that way. It's because of trade, because of cultural mingling.
Yeah,
everything we have is because of sharing. And if we even look at like a biological perspective on this, bacteria, viruses, they survive and thrive because they're constantly exchanging DNA. They're constantly exchanging genetic information. We do the same thing. We are exchanging cells. We're exchanging information. I am the person I am today because of the people I've had intimate connections with in my past. I've picked up things from them. I've learned from them. I've adopted gestures and facial expressions and turns of phrases because of the people I've interacted with. So to make this idea that we exchange and take from other cultures and take from other people a universally bad or malevolent thing, a nefarious thing, is doing us such a disservice, because we are, again, creatures that are tribal, that are connected, that are meant to be in communication and exchanging and having things free flow. And yes, we pay respect. And yes, we honor it. And yes, we also make sure that it is something that it's okay to take, that we're not taking something that they say, no, this is sacred to us, you're not allowed to use it. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a conversation right now around the peyote plant with indigenous cultures where they do not want Westerners or white people using the sacred peyote plant and saying, well, maybe you can use a synthesized version, a synthetic version, but this is for our culture only. You know, that is an interesting conversation and is one that is important to be having. Mm-hmm. But these ideas and these practices are being willfully given, willingly given. They're saying, yes, take them, use them, please use these things. It will make the world a better place. The issue I have is, as a white man from Chicago, I don't want to go and say I'm now an expert in Kashmir Shaivite Tantra. And there are people who do that. There are a lot of people who come and say, I'm from Kansas, but now I'm an expert in Vajrayana Buddhist Tantra. All right. I'm from New York, but now I've gotten 3 degrees in Sanskrit and I can answer all the questions about, you know, Vedanta. I think there's a lot of hubris there. And there are some really beautiful Tantra teachers who have done that. And I personally don't want to be one of them. I don't want to go and say, hey, I'm going to become an expert in something foreign. Mm-hmm. I'd rather take these ideas, study them, learn from masters, learn from people who have used them in depth, and then bring them back, strip them of their cultural context, strip them of what made them them, because these are universal truths. Even the term for Hinduism is Sanatana Dharma, which means the eternal truth, that if you just pay attention, you'll discover these same things. Take them and say, how can I make them relevant to here? How can I root them in today's culture and make them something that doesn't feel culturally appropriative, but still retain the heart and the soul and make it something that is universal?
Yeah. I think you used a really important word there of just learning. Like, as we all interact with each other or travel or read a fucking book, you don't have to rip out the pages of the book and then, like, it's not some kind of limited resource. These are ideas that we're sharing and learning from, and you're taking it, you're using it in a more Western context and a queer context, and I'm just so glad that you're more like translating than anything else.
I love that. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on, we don't have to spend a lot of time here because I think you've already given us quite a good idea around how to deal with this already, but specifically the spiritual portion of what you do. What would you say to someone that has maybe a lot of religious trauma or baggage? They feel that their queer identity clashes with anything spiritual. How would you address somebody's kind of concerns or questions around spirituality and the way that you practice spirituality?
That is the case for so many of us, because even the quote unquote inclusive churches will often say things like, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Right. Which my God, I heard that so much growing up.
it's not inclusive. It doesn't feel good. And many of us are carrying a lot of baggage around religiosity. Mm. And I'll use the term religiosity as opposed to spirituality. The thing about spirituality is that it is unbounded. There is no dogma. There is no rules. You don't have to believe in God to be spiritual. You don't have to believe in Jesus. You don't have to believe in sin. You don't believe in any shit. Mm. I think the most important first step, if you're questioning, I'm burned by religion, but I'd like to have a spiritual life, is to cultivate the experience of awe, to try and approach a walk outside with wonderment, to see the majesty that exists in the grass, the immense beauty of the skies, just the awe you feel when you hold someone who loves you and you love them. Notice the awe that can be triggered from a really good meal, and start to experience that feeling of something greater, that there is something expansive and joyful and powerful in this world, and it doesn't need a name. It doesn't need to be called Gaia or God or Jesus or the Holy Spirit or Mother Earth or Shiva or Allah or whatever you want to call it. But there is something awe-inspiring in this world. And if you just pursue the experience of awe, you will be connecting with spirit.
Beautifully said. I couldn't agree more. One last thing that I wanted to be able to kind of give our listeners today for them to be able to take away and start implementing right away. Do you have any recommendations, a tip or something that our listeners can take away to start stepping into a little more connected spiritual, sexual practice? And is this a universal tip, or is this, do you have something specific for people who have a partner or partners versus someone who's single?
Great. Two things. One is for yourself and one is for somebody else that you're with.
Beautiful. And
next time you're going to have an intimate moment with someone, and this can be sexual, it could also just be with somebody you're good friends with. That's fine too. take a moment and breathe with them. Either hold each other and feel each other chest to chest, belly to belly, or just place your hand on their heart and breathe with them and notice what happens, because the breath carries our life force. You can go days without eating, hours, sometimes days without drinking, but you can only go for a few moments without breathing. And so when you connect that vital force of air, prana, chi, whatever you want to call it, through the breath, intimacy starts to occur. So try that with somebody. And then with yourself, a really useful tool and something that I often have my clients do is practice the art of a self-massage. So many of us are not very kind to our bodies. But take 15 minutes tonight. Go in the bathroom, set down a towel, go get some massage oil or some coconut oil, and massage every part of your body. And while you do it, appreciate whatever part you're currently working on. Say thank you to it. Just notice all the things it does for you. And just feel that gratitude for this amazing gift you've been given, because quite honestly, this human body is the most ridiculously superb gift you could have. Better than any iPad or any smartwatch or any Ferrari. The things that this body does is absolutely phenomenal. And if you can appreciate it and start to see it as the miracle that it is, your connection with yourself will change. And by changing that, your connection with other people will as well.
Amazing. Kaylin, thank you so much for being here today, for like sharing your wisdom and all these tips with us. I really appreciate having you. We will link everything down in the show notes for everyone, but do you want to give everyone just a quick little spiel about where to find you and what, you know, what you have going on?
Of course. Well, YouTube is my favorite platform, youtube.com/ecstaticself. I have written two books thus far. I'm working on my third right now. The first is called Journey to the Ecstatic Self, and it is a workbook. So you can choose your own adventure as you explore it, very much in the vein of all the things you talked about today. The second book, if you like stories, is a fantasy novel. So this idea of how do we come home to ourselves? How do we become more of the empowered person we're meant to be? That story is told in the form of a parable about a teenage half dragon who, the book starts with him almost being lynched by his classmates for being different. And the journey he goes on to learn to love and accept himself. So those are two great things as well. If you like the more spicy erotic side of things, I do have a naked Twitter and OnlyFans. If you like kind of getting more behind the scenes of my life and what I'm doing, Patreon is a good place. You can work with me one-on-one through my website, Ecstatic Self. And this year I'm going to start planning in-person retreats and workshops. So if you want to come and hang out with a group of 20 other people and do some soulful work together, you'd be more than welcome.
Fabulous. All right. Thank you so, so much. Again, y'all, we will have all these links down in the show notes so that you can find Kaylin's work very easily. Please go check out his YouTube, go check out his books, go work with him directly. I'm just so thankful to have you here today and for all the wisdom you shared with us. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's been such a sincere pleasure.
Amazing. All right. Well, my unicorns, I will see you on the next episode. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with a friend so they too can become more confident. You can also help more people find the show by leaving a 5-star review wherever you listen. And if you want to become a more confident queer with support from yours truly, head to coachalexray.com or use the link down in the show notes. I'm looking forward to working with you.